Well, good afternoon. I almost said good morning there. It may be a good morning to some of you. We are back here on, it's kind of like a two-part webinar. We are going to be talking about getting clients not only onboarded, but getting them involved. So there's three purposes, even though there's two sections of this webinar. One is the onboarding, one is the involvement. But there's really three sections. We're going to be talking about getting your client a standard type of onboarding checklist, how you can integrate those things and integrate them and expand upon them and repurpose them, kind of automate the whole solution. And then we're going to be talking about involvement and why getting the client invested at the beginning is very important for the success of the project. And so while we are looking, and everyone should be actually seeing my Todoist screen where I've hidden most of the stuff, but we'll open things up as we go. I'm using that as just a kind of a whiteboard for now, but we'll also talk about how you can get this exact checklist in Todoist format for those of you who use Todoist. So there's some other cool things we'll talk about. But before we begin, yes, over the past 2 or 3 weeks, we've been trying out different types of webinar solutions, everything from Zoho Webinar, Zoho Meeting, to ScreenLeap, to I even tested out a whole bunch of other apps that say, hey, we are the best for webinars. But every single one of them fell short in major areas. We're not talking about, oh, I don't like the user interface. We are simply talking about, oh, the audio drops out, or, oh, it actually doesn't broadcast the screen dimensions that I'm trying to share, or the audio seems to be 3 to 5 seconds ahead of the actual screen. I've even run into a lot of them that say, yes, we offer HD screen sharing and all these other great things. But when you actually break it down, all they're really built for was doing PowerPoint presentation meetings. And the moment you provide live interaction where somebody actually uses and interacts with something on the screen, it gets all choppy and it's unusable. And you know, there are others that I love to be able to try, but it's not like I really have $600, $700 just sitting around to try the AppSumo live webinar option. Now, why do you say $700? Because in order to even attempt to do what we do here at WP Studio, I would have to buy 6 codes in order to activate all the, at least 30 frames per second, the broadcast, the recording. And the crazy thing is, even that doesn't do everything we need it to do and doesn't do what Zoom does. There's little things that Zoom provides in controls, in interaction, and doing all these other issues. And so, yes, while I loved aspects of being able to embed a screen directly into a web page, the detriment to the actual quality of the broadcast isn't worth it. It would be perfectly fine if all I was doing was PowerPoint presentations, sales presentations, but that's not what we do here. So that's where we are right now, and I think that's where we'll be for a bit longer. So I hope, before we begin our sample client checklist stuff, I wanted to just thank everybody for bearing with me as we tried certain things. I know some of the past few webinars didn't quite go off how we wanted them, but you know, we live and we learn, and then we move on. I really had high hopes for the ScreenLeap, but when we actually put it through its paces, it just did not work as well as even in simple tests. All right, So that's the quick update on the webinar stuff and why we were back in Zoom. I hope you are all happy with the Zoom results for now. Okay, so we're talking about client onboarding and getting the clients involved. So before we talk about the client involvement and what stages and creative things you can do to get them involved, I wanted to, for some of you, this may be kind of a refresher on, am I hitting all the checklists for things I need to do to onboard a client into my web development process? And that's the goal of this first part. And I'm going to talk through a number of these items and why certain things need to happen before others. So the first thing, I am making the assumption the client has already come to you, or the potential client has already come to you, whether that's through a direct referral, whether that is through the website form, whether that they've just contacted you directly. So this whole concept starts, the checklist is, we already have the client interested, and we've maybe informally talked about the process, and we've maybe informally talked about what services we can provide for the client, and we are ready to basically onboard them into the system. We're ready to make them an official person or an entity that we as our business are going to relate to. Now, it's also important to understand that if you get to this point where you're going to present the contract to the client, you're going to actually put a price out there, an actual contract, an actual agreement, even if the client walks away, you still want them in your resources, in your contact, in your whatever. Because if any potential client has gotten to this point where they have expressed interest, maybe they didn't like the price, they need to be on our prospect list. So therefore, we should have been starting a proper, official, structured communication system so that clients going forward, even if they're not our client right now, they will view you in a professional level. So let's start about, okay, so they have come to us and we are ready to get started. So what I call the setup and client contract area is we need a system. Now, when I'm going to use the word system in today's presentation, it could be a CRM that you use. It could be a Trello board. It could be Todoist. It could be any type of system where you log information. I have seen people do a very good job actually storing everything as Google Drive documents. Like every client has a Google Drive document. Why is that? Hold on. The Google Assistant just popped up on my screen. So one of the reasons why you could use that is the search functionality on Google Drive is incredible. So if you have a template, even if it started off with a Word document template, and you start filling in all the forms in like subsections of an actual document with project details, what's the client, what's their contact, you can search that stuff up. You don't have to use a massively expensive or even a robust customer resource management. If you are just getting started, you may find that it just simply keeping them in a document, each client has their own document where you record everything. There's a benefit to this if you're just getting started, like you've never done this type of officialized documentation of client interaction. As your company grows, you have a larger record where maybe you're hiring an assistant, you have an intern, you have somebody else who's coming along, and it's time to level up your company. And maybe you do need at that point a CRM, Well, if you have all these documents where they're all exactly the same, where the first part is the name and address and it's all typed in because you've been using a template to start every single document, somebody can just enter that into the CRM. And it's, or you can enter it into a CRM and you're not going to have to chase all the stuff. Paul, yes, this sounds like being organized. You mean I'm not supposed to dump every single document onto the desktop? Okay, you do not have to admit this, but how many of you have ever run out of real estate on your desktop because every single icon is taken and they start overlapping? And we can just move on from there. Okay, so record project details. Now, you guys know I love Todoist. One of the things that is incredible with Todoist is I could use this as my entire CRM for my client. Why? Because every single to-do project area does have the ability for me to make notes, add subtasks, add activities. I can actually do a whole bunch of things. Like I could record different project details. So, you know, I can actually say this is client name, Bob's Big Burger House. And you can make them comments, you can make all these things. So I could record different things if I wanted to. Now, we're not going to use that. I'm not going to go through this for every single one. But record your project details in whatever solution you're doing. Now, because you're a web-based company, you need a way for a client to access their contracts. That could be you're just simply making a private page or a user page on a WordPress, you know, profile where you have uploaded to their specific profile page or their private page that they can visit a link to download the web design contract. This is one of those checklists. If you do it at the very beginning, all of a sudden, you're going to save yourself. I don't know how many times in the past when I did a lot of work with different law firms, I would, and these are law firms, they're supposed to be organized. They're supposed to know where their paperwork is. How many times I have been asked for a copy of the contract that I know they've been sent. It's sitting in their email. I know it's an attached to the very previous email that we just sent, but you still get asked for it. So, upload your web design contract somewhere on the internet that only the client has access to. Now, that could also be a shared folder, a Google Drive folder, a Dropbox, a whatever, an Evernote folder. However you choose to organize your information, then you need to choose to send the web design contract and project details for signing. This doesn't have to be official signing thing. You don't have to go to, DocuSign and sign up for a contract and do all these other things. You could. It would make you look very official for doing that, but that takes some time. But this can also just be, these are attached. These are documents that are attached to your email, and they need to return them to you signed, whether they scan it to you, fax it to you, email it, whatever. They need to get that back to you once it's signed. And then you need to have your check saying, okay, I've received the signed contract. Guess what? We're not going to do anything for the project until we have the signed contract back. Doesn't matter if the client says, this is super important. I'm willing to pay you $10,000 to start the project right now. And I'll get the legal team on this, signing this. No, you're not starting a single thing until you have received that contract. Now, if for whatever reason they pay you at stage one before they've signed the contract, I would be very careful. I know we're just going to say if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. If somebody's willing to just throw money at something before they even have signed a contract, and it's a large sum of money, be very careful that all of a sudden, 5 days later, or 3 weeks later, or 2 months later, they're going to sue you because, oh, well, you know, we sent you this money, you didn't deliver. Yes, you can simply say, you didn't sign the contract. The contract is unsigned. It depends on what state you're in. You may still have to go to court. You may still have to hire a lawyer. You may still have to do all sorts of things because somebody just wanted to jump the gun. This is your business. Protect. It, make sure you have signed contracts before you receive the money, honestly. Now, it's perfectly fine to send an invoice at the same time you send the signed contract. I put these as there because I have read, I don't know anybody personally, but I have read horror stories of money being sent prior to contract signing and then an attempt to reverse it. Paul, great question. Here's my take, and this is from my lawyer for me. If you are doing a contract greater than $1,500, it's going to be worth it in the long run to get it notarized, that the contract is signed, so that there is at least an official stamp, a legal stamp. A notary in the United States is, and I don't know if they have notaries specifically in parts of Europe and other areas, but a notary is someone who is taking a licensed test. They are licensed by your state or nation, where they are just checking to make sure that the person who signed the contract is the actual person. They are watching the signature. Maybe they've taken the ID to verify that the person who's signing it. Then in their notary book, they are logging whatever document or the agreement that was done. They stamp it, and it's now legal, and it will help you out in a court of law, because that will eliminate anyone saying, I didn't sign it, or I did not agree to this, I did not. Because you could just produce another document, another contract, they say, that's not there. Now, the reason why 1500 is because when you're going below 1500 in some places, a lot of that's just small claims court. And that's going to be a lot of times not worth your time. But once you go above that, it can be small claims court, but it can also be a larger court. Paul, great thing. How do we notarize electronic documents? There's several options. There are now online notaries. Just do a Google search for that. There's a service, and I think they even have a monthly membership for online notaries. And I believe it was actually on Shark Tank, one of the big online notaries. So basically, you just have to have a Zoom or Skype call. The notary is there taking the information, signing the stuff, and you get a digital notary. I'm sure there are other types of things. So hopefully that helps. The larger the amount, the more legal you need to make it be, just to protect yourself. Okay, so once you've sent the invoice, notice how we need to confirm our payment before we do anything else. Once we've confirmed the first payment, and that could be anything what you've agreed, the initial payment, the whole payment, whatever the payment is, we confirm the payment. So then you set up your project milestone system. Maybe that is in Todoist. Maybe that's on Trello. Maybe whatever it is, you initialize and you start filling everything out with what has to be done for what milestone. And at this point, when we're still setting up, if you are subcontracting anyone, you need to assign those roles. You need to get that in, get that out there, so you have either subcontracted, if you have other people working with you, you need to assign who's doing what. so that you can move on to the getting started. This is part, and we're going to come back to some of this. This is part of the getting the client involved. You've gotten the payment. You've gotten the agreement. You're ready to move forward. And so now, whether it's through an email or whether it's through a chat window, maybe you're sharing a Slack channel. Maybe you're creating another type of a channel. Maybe you know there's going to have to be a lot of back and forth video stuff. So maybe you look at creating a Zoom room or Zoom, not on the free version. I don't know if you know this, but on Zoom, the application, like if you download the Zoom app, there is a chat area. And so you can create private chat rooms that are built into Zoom. So maybe this is one of those things, rather than try and teach the client how to use Slack, how to use this, just you're going to teach them how to use Zoom. Have a little chat room where they can come in. You can go back and forth. Everything is documented there on the chat room. And then you can always connect up and start a video call whenever you need to. But you need to introduce everybody who's working on the project. You may not have to do this if it's just you and the client. That's it. You don't need to introduce, hey, I'm Ben. This is Ben. And your name is Bob. And you do it. You don't have to do that. But if you do have multiple people working on it, this is a huge piece of professionalism. Maybe you should. Our designer for this project is going to be Robert. Robert's going to be taking care of all the photography. You will see him later on in 2 weeks at your office taking photographs of the office and taking profile pics of each one of your staff members. He will coordinate with you on that. Let me introduce Sarah. Sarah is going to be writing your copy, and she's going to be doing this. Periodically, Sarah may reach out to you to request information about your marketing copy. You know, these are all things that I think are very helpful in establishing, hey, you know, who is this? This will also help that if you do have multiple people you work with and you're introducing them to the client, or let's say you don't introduce them and now Sarah just out of the blue emails them, the client's going to be like, who is this person? I know they're from that company that we hired to do the design, but I don't know who she is. And why should I give her, shouldn't she get that stuff from Ben? He's the guy we've been communicating to. So that's a good idea to do this. Now, even if you're not at this point and you're still just a one-person shop, I would use these type of things in your checklist. Because it makes you think, are there other things, do I need to communicate with the client about who's going to be contacting them? Do I need, or who's going to be working on the project? Oh, for this project, no, I don't need to. So just check it and say, okay, I've thought about this. Then we assign communication channels. I kind of briefly talked about that. How are you establishing direct communication? Is everything through email? Are you using a customer support, a CRM system? Are you using a project management system where you have created a client account and they have logged in? We need to make sure that everything goes through the proper channel for whatever works for you. Then send your getting started email. This is welcome to the family. We're so excited that we here at Bob's Big House Websites is going to be working with you to craft the future vision of your online presence, blah, blah, blah. We want them to feel that they've just been welcomed into something. The getting started is kind of the brief overview, but really it is a welcome to the family. This is going to set the stage for getting the client involved and interactive with the whole process. So the getting started email, welcome to the family. And then we also want to send and letting them know that we're going to send them a survey. Now this survey is the un... is the type of questions that are not going to inundate the client with tons of things they have to think about. We're not going to be sitting there and saying, within 3 to 5 years, and your company is going to have a growth trajectory of X, at what point do you see your sales revenue passing the amount of your... No, we're not going to be doing any of that stuff. Our survey is getting these base informations that, so we can also assess where the client is. It could be, hey, can you tell me about 3 of your competitors? Do you know what their websites are? Who do you want to be your target audience? If you were to say, describe me your perfect customer. That is such a question that it's amazing more developers don't ask. Just ask the client to describe their perfect customer. What you get from them may give you the focus on design decisions. What if their focus, if they believe their focus is more on recent college graduates, or do they believe their focus is on a family of 11 plus children? Would we make certain design decisions? Are there certain ways of writing styles? A younger, more postmodern writing style, or a more traditional direct forward style? Use that survey to get you to going down the right path. And then, okay, so we've done all this stuff. We've set up everything. We've got the client. We've got the payment. We have introduced them to the family. And then part of that is setting up the initial video call. And you'll notice that I have little tags here, during call, after call. Because during your first initial video call or phone call or whatever it is, you really have 3 purposes. Establish the understanding of the website purpose and goals. This is, you've already done your contract, you've already done everything. This is restating things so that we know there is no misunderstanding about what the client wants. We've now done this several times, and we haven't even started building the site. Notice how at the very beginning, sure, we have, before all this starts, is the informal conversation where we're getting information about the client wanting us to build them a website. Then we have a contract with basically the milestones and the things that we're going to develop for them. And they've even signed that. So we've had all this stuff. Then we're setting up the getting started. We have some survey stuff. So we are getting information that relates to our understanding of where the project is. And then we're doing it again during the call. We're establishing where we are going. This is a broad level. And it gives that client one more time to say, I really was more wanted it to be more focused on our collection of new clients rather than the support of our old clients. And all of a sudden, that's going to change how you handle all your SEO stuff. Because if now it's not the retention of current clients, but it's the establishment of brand new clients, we may have to write different types of marketing copy on the front page. Establish expectations of the project scope and solidify the agreements of the project timeline. Both of these are making sure that even before we begin the development, we are not going to, there's always a chance you'll fall off the rails or something will go wrong with the project. But at least this gives us great, at least some flexibility of making sure everything is understood. And I say the flexibility of making things, because this, before we've done any work, we can still massage the project scope. We can still massage the project timeline because it hasn't messed anything up. And so therefore, once we've had this call and we've been able to ask any clarifying questions, they've been able to ask any clarifying questions, we can now sit Basically, you have the call, then literally as soon as you get off the call, you prepare the creative brief. Basically, that's a summary of the call that just happened, which covers the website purpose and goals, project scope, project timeline. You send the creative brief. We can also, I've seen it kind of, some of these flow together. Creative brief is about what you're going to be creating. And then we're going to follow up reinforcing the client expectations on timeline and scope of the project. And at that point, basically, as long, and some of these you may want to get them sign off that they, you know, yes, we're good to go. And maybe there's, with this creative brief and the reinforcement, there is the "we are good to go" button at the back, or something that they've got to authorize. At that point, update all that has happened into your project management system. So now you've got your milestones, the project scope, when things have to be done by. That's when you can litter everything. It can be really frustrating spending an entire day creating the roadmap and the scope and everything, putting it into your project management tool, and then you have a call with the client to get started, add clarifications, and it turns out things were changed, and now you've got to go back into the project management system, change things, and now you're working out of order. So that's why I'm really not adding all of this stuff into the project management system until I have, basically, it's multiple affirmations that we're on the same page. So then we get to collect the resources. Remember, we also ask the client about their competitors, who their target audience is. This is the chance for you to do a bit of marketing stuff where you are do a little competitor research. Maybe it's the types of websites, the size of websites, the reach, the type of SEO that these clients, these competitors are doing, where the target audience is located in their local town. I mean, here, the other thing is, if the client says our target audience is college students and they do not live in a college town, you either have to bring back to the client, you know, did you realize that your business, your local delivery business, you're targeting college students and there are none here? Or are you only targeting them when they're on summer break or winter break? And so therefore you need to do certain types of building different pages for or marketing to people who go outside, and then, you know, it's more of a time-based marketing. So 2 months prior to the break, you're then marketing this job opening or this business opportunity to different college towns. That, and maybe that's the other thing, your target audience research. You need to find out where most of the kids go to college from. Yeah, that's actually a very easy one. Most public schools actually have a public record of where their college, their high school students go to. Just put that into a database, pull information out, find the 10 closest cities. And then if you do that for the client, you come back and say, you know, this is where we want to do our targeted ads. And we need all the branding, media, and style guides from the client so we can build the site. If you are performing a lot of these things, and some of these can be ongoing research projects, and you're collecting them, you're putting them into the document, the results, you are then able to come back and educate the client on everything you have found and explain why this is going to dictate certain design decisions. This is so much easier to tell a client, we are doing the design decision. I know you wanted this blinking light and this dancing squirrel GIF on your front page, but the reason why we're not going to go with that is because the target audience that is in, that your college student target audience that turns out most of the college students went to the University of Maryland, or most of the people in this area went into University of Maryland or other types of things. We don't want to use a dancing squirrel because it might be a good idea to use a terrapin. That's the mascot of the University of Maryland. So maybe we need a turtle type things. And so let's look at color schemes that have to do with the University of Maryland. Not the exact color, but we can pull out the specific red, the yellow, that type of flag, the Maryland flag that's integrated into the logo of the university. So even though you know we are never putting a dancing squirrel GIF on this site, when you present it to the client in terms of target audience and competitor research about why we're going to go in this direction, you get less of a pushback because it's not you letting the client know you're just a better designer than them. It's letting the actual research that you've done. And you're again, that helps understand the development process. Part of this educating the client is having ongoing progress calls. Say, and I would always end a progress call, whether it's a call or an actual email with the client. You end it with, all right, here's your homework assignment for this week. Or for this next 2 weeks, this is your project. I need you to do this. During the whole development process, I really would encourage you to tell the client, here's how I need your help. Because at that point, each week that goes in, each 2 week period or each thing, the client stays connected to the development process. They're invested in the outcome and they feel like they are a part of it. You are the manager of the whole process. They're going to feel like they're paying you to do something, but they're a part of the building project. Okay, so before we go on to how to break down a whole bunch of these and little aspects of this, I'm going to show you how you can duplicate this on your own system. Now, notice how we haven't built the site yet. The building the site, that's your own thing. That's you, the developer, the designer. You set how you want that to be done. Client onboarding needs to be basically the step beyond just communicating what's happening, but requesting the information, getting them integrated, understanding the client, and making sure you're bringing them along the process with understandable details, like certain research, certain things that you have dug into. All right, so if it's been a while, or maybe you just use Todoist for checklists, when you create a project, like this is the sample client checklist, there's lots of things you can do. Yes, you can add tasks, you can do other things, but at every project allows you to create sections, so you can break them up into sections. And then you can sort things. There's a hierarchy to Todoist now. But you can also export, once you've built your template, you can export it. And you can export it as a shared URL, which is what I did for you guys. And you copy that to the clipboard. And if you have Todoist, you can simply, and if you have an account, you can click on that link. And it will import the exact project that you have here, all set into sections. Now you can then go ahead and customize this, change certain things, do what you want. And then once you're ready, I would export it export it as a file, put it in one of your valued folders so that when you're ready to start a new project with a new client, you simply put the client name as the project and you import it and you just drag that file. And it will filter everything out. You can start going through, you have your checklist, you can immediately see exactly what's going on with your client in terms of making sure you keep things going. Making things uniform in terms of interacting with the client is going to allow you to get them involved. Okay, so there are 7 major elements of getting the client involved. If you do these, your client is going to be invested into the project. One of the major ones is with this initial call section. Some people call it the kickoff call. This should be ideally with one person. It could be anyone from the CEO to the marketing admin. This needs to be your main contact for what's going to be happening. This is your way of, we are already in agreement that we are working with you, both from your side and their side. They've already paid, or they have initiated the payment. They've made the down payment. They made the first milestone payment. They've signed the contract. They're ready to go. This is where you need to establish the relationship that you're in it to help them get to where they want. You are invested in their success. And as I said, this is also where in our survey, this is also important to establish kind of strong communications without, as I said in the handout, too much strain on the client side. This survey should be something that somebody can easily fill out. It could be simply a gravity form survey or some other survey that you have put together that every client gets and everything goes through there. It should be easy to fill out. It should not require them to do tons of research, because if anything is going to retire or require somebody to do tons of research, that should be, quote, the homework assignments during your calls that you have or during your milestone meetups or project updates, however you call it. But the welcome survey needs to be something people can fill out quickly and without too much effort. That also gives you data that you're going to be able to use for the website, you're going to be able to use to interact with the client, and it's just very useful information. Plus, this is also the second time they have had direct input in the output of the website. Then, in this whole process, utilizing something like Approval Studio to get that client or to get that contact person to approve certain things during the development process makes a client feel, or makes the contact person feel, like they are the direct control of what is approved and what is not. And a lot of the times, you may think this is busy work, but I do feel, and I have seen the results, that it invests the client in feeling like they have a direct output or a direct influence on the results of the project. So therefore, they're invested in the success of the project. So using Approval Studio to maybe you put a document out, or you have a page that you have a screenshot of, here is the font samples that we are going to be using on the site. So you have, this is what a title, page title is going to look like. This is the font of the picture, or this is the font of the paragraph. This is what a picture will look like when it is wrapped by a paragraph of text. Paul, I would prefer to probably use a survey program rather than a document that they write. But again, that's going to depend. If it is all of a sudden a stamp collecting group that meets once a month at the local fire station and 98% of the entire group has never touched a computer, maybe printing it off and bringing them the actual document for them to fill out is a better way to do it. Not that I have any understanding of groups that rent fire stations. Okay, so getting back to the approval studio, I would put it as things that you approve, the font samples, color palettes. You can just simply create an entire box that has the different colors and what they're used for. Maybe you also have a non-graphical wireframe of the layout. Again, we've talked about this when we had wireframe webinars. The reason you'd use kind of black and white, non-graphical wireframes is too many people, too many clients get stuck on the color of the wireframe, the picture you chose to use in the wireframe. Use a non-graphical wireframe to approve the layout structure, the layout concept of maybe it's just segments of the site. Okay, so this is going to be the profile page of the CEO, where his picture will be here, text will be here, there's some little stuff there. Use a wireframe program. Get Approval Studio to get the approval. Because by the end of this, you're going to have five or six things that the client has said, yes, that's great. Yes, that's great. And maybe you put a logo in there that you're getting. Yes, we love that logo. It's proof. They are getting the feeling that they're in charge. This is another big one that gets the client invested in the success. One of the homework assignments I've always given to a client is to get them to collect a minimum of 20 contacts that are going to be invited to the launch party. Depending on the size of the client, the type of site, launch party could actually be a party at the office. Launch party could simply be an email that goes out on Wednesday morning to say, the website is opening at 2:00. We invite you to come by and see the website. So you either need the name and the email of the person or the name and the actual physical address if you're inviting them for an actual party. Here's the other thing. I would write the content and then I would deliver it back to the client and say, it's now your responsibility to send this out. I've written it for you. I've written you the invitation. I've written you the explanation about your site. And again, as long as they are building that list, all of a sudden they get excited because they're like, you know what? Yeah, I've got 10 people I know I want to tell about this new project that we're doing. So great, let me pull that together. It gives them something to do because they start thinking about who their contact base is. They invite them in. And you literally have a launch party. Now, the site may have already launched. Maybe it launches on Friday or Thursday, and your launch party is next Tuesday or next Thursday. Make it an event. Because here's the other thing. Most humans at least have a little bit of a nice streak in them, that if they're invited even to an online launch party or an actual launch party, they're going to say positive things about, this is great, love your new site. That reinforces it to your clients from people that they respect, that they like to hear positive feedback. That is going to boost you. It's one of those sneaky little things. If you can get people that the client likes to say positive things to the client about your work, the client's estimation of you goes up. And they're invested in this because now their friends know about it. So then we schedule follow-up calls. Yes, this is not just the educating the client stuff. These are constant. It's the follow-up calls a week after the launch, 3 months after the launch, a year later, whatever. Put them on the calendar. Remind the client, hey, are you still good for Thursday, December 18th? Because I know you're going out of vacation right after that. Just want to follow up, make sure everything's great, and I want to give you a few bits of information about the event or the site. So that's one thing. Part of your ongoing calls and communication is to create educational follow-up. So you have a follow-up calls for opportunities to continue asking questions, refine the site, keep developing with the client. Then there's educational follow-ups. This is where you can begin to sell additional projects, because for many of your clients, they may have Facebook, but maybe they've never used it for business. So these are educational opportunities to talk about how Facebook ads and Facebook marketing can help boost that. And then maybe the client has never, they know some people use Instagram, but they don't know what to do. You have a little call, and maybe you have 5 or 6 of your clients on the call where you have a little conversation about the top 5 things you can do on Instagram to link off to your site. And again, each one of those calls is, we hope you can take these 5 steps and you can use them to continue to develop your brand and your marketing. But if you want a more focused approach, just wanted to remind everyone, if you hadn't seen some of the new offerings on our site, we do offer social media marketing. We do offer these. Boom, you're basically saying, hey, client, you can do it. We're the experts. We give you here these 5 ideas. But if you don't want to do it, and most clients never want to do it, we're having another opportunity to say, we're still invested in you. We will still work with you if you want us to do this for you. And then we've talked about this one before. If you're looking at the handout, it's the final step on the handout. During the process of building your website, you need to build, and I really believe this, you need to build a simplified editor content submission system. That you've got to look, is there something that the client would like to have control over? Everything from the on-off switch that just says that the business is open, the business is closed for the night, check back tomorrow. We want something where the client can log in and say, all right, I'm going to turn on my switch. I'm at business. Business is open. Or the office is open. And then they can turn it off. The office is off. The office is closed right now. Maybe there's alert messages. Maybe there are times to create special notifications, updates, you know. Current, maybe it's a water delivery service and you're building them a website and they just want to do, they love quotes and they decide they want to share quotes about water. So you just have a little entry form where they can type in the name of the quote, or maybe you have 400 quotes that are in a drop-down list and they can just select which quote they want to use for the day. Having a system, a simple page, a form, and again, I've shown you how to do that with Gravity Forms and other forms that are out there. Having a system that the client can feel like they control an aspect of the website after post-launch that allows them to integrate is going to say, it's going to allow the client to stay invested because they see practical output, that it's actually accomplishing something. So I hope this helps, and at least this conversation that we've had. We want to get the client involved or invested from the very early stages of the project. We don't want to simply, all right, we're signing the contract and you know what, I'll deliver the website when we're done. And we have no contact with the client until we launch it and we say, here's the site, have a great rest of the day. Client is going to, when that happens, client's going to be like, great, I got a website. And then they might visit it for 1 or 2 days. And after that, they may not even know that the site actually broke because they've never visited it. Getting them involved early means they will stay involved for the long term. It's not always true, but you have a much better chance at having the clients invested in it. Now, why is this beneficial in the long run for you? Yes, it's obvious that a client invested, a constant invested in the project is going to remember you or keep you at the front, or your business at the front of their mind when talking about their website, or people ask who did the website, or they like to talk about it. They like to share you because they feel like they have a secret that other people don't know, somebody who built them the website. The other thing that is beneficial, how many of you actually have a, whether it's a testimonial site or section on your own website, or here are projects that we have done? I know many of you do because I've seen them, where maybe you have a picture of the website and a link off to the company. Say, these are the past 10, these are 10 of the projects that we've worked on in the past. Nothing is worse than having on our resume page, here is a site that we did that when a potential new client goes to visit, it's a, basically a site that's in disrepair, because nobody cared about it. It died. Nothing's changed. No updates. It still says 2007 in the copyright section, in the footer. So keeping the client involved, or encouraging them or teaching them how to stay involved with their website, helps you in the long run, both for potential new clients and referrals, but also for the reputation of what you've done. I know this. One of the government contracts that I did a long time ago, I did not get them involved. I just built what they wanted per spec and launched the site. They loved it. It has not changed for 20 years. It was at the point where I removed it from anything because I didn't want to be associated with the website anymore. And I lost a great resource here in the DC area if I were going to be able, because I could say, yes, I work with government contractors. So this is one way of getting clients involved during the onboarding system. Because you'll notice this whole checklist that we looked at in Todoist, and it's all broken down on the handout. This is all before we developed the site or worked on the site. And they're all elements of communicating, integrating, and encouraging your client to be involved in the project. So I hope you have a great rest of the day. And we'll see you in Slack. Take care, everybody. And I'll get this recording up and ready in just a bit.